Can you start by sharing how your artistic journey began and what inspired you to pursue the arts?
Well, I don't think I really had a choice.
Amen.
Welcome to the Cloud Machine Podcast, your all-access pass to the music industry. I'm your host, Matt Landry, and every week we immerse you in the music world, uncovering industry insights, offering expert guidance, and exploring the stories that influence the industry. The Cloud Machine Podcast is brought to you by Aites, the innovative creative agency behind some of your favorite live concerts and tours. Want to take your music to the next level? Join our vibrant community on the Aites Network Discord. And with that, let's get started with today's episode.
Welcome back to the Cloud Machine Podcast. This week, I'm thrilled to have a very special guest, my brother, Simon Rhys Landry. Not only is Simon an exceptional, talented artist in theater, music, visual arts, and performing arts, but he's also currently honing his craft at the Theater Conservatory at the University of Ottawa. Today, we'll explore his creative journey, discuss the reality of growing up with diverse inspirations, and dive into topics like authenticity, performance, and pivoting to new artistic ventures. Hi, Simon. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing really well, honestly. It's been a long week of tech rehearsals, but I'm here. I'm awake and I'm so ready to talk to you.
Yes, this is one of the earliest podcasts that I've done, probably, and I love to see it. And this is a very special episode for me because, of course, the family special episode, as you said, over text.
Yes.
So I'm very happy to have you here. I'm very stoked, and I've been waiting for a long time for this. So
me too.
All right, Simon. As you know, I want to start the podcast. I always want to start the podcast. Mm-hmm. What has been your favorite live show experience as a fan?
Oh my gosh. You know, I constantly think back on all of like the shows that I've seen. Of course, I'm a performing artist. I do a lot of live things. I love seeing people perform live. But honestly, my favorite show that I've ever seen is a show that was presented by Yes Theater in Sudbury. It was created by Jeannie Pinard and Ruthie Coote, and it is Song to the Moon. It's this concept concert that was presented in the summer of 2022, I believe. And it was all women. All the songs were like these hits by women, and it was such a beautiful show. It was an outdoor show. It was this kind of like Coliseum area that we have in Sudbury that all the people take pictures at. But we were performing there.
The Grotto.
The Grotto, yes.
Shout out The Grotto, yes.
And it was just, it was so beautiful. Every song was so touching. The arrangements that they created for every song was better than all of the original arrangements for all of like these beautiful pop songs. It was really quite fascinating to see. And everything just stays in my mind. Like every time I hear Juice by Lizzo, I'm always kind of let down because it's not the arrangement that was in their show. And it's
right.
It was so beautiful. The music, all the singers, all such lovely women that I can consider friends. And it's just always such a nice feeling to go back to and to go revisit. So yeah, that's my answer for my favorite live show experience.
Was there a live band?
Yes, there was a live band. Yes.
Yeah.
I can't remember how many people were in the band. I think it was probably seven or eight musicians, which was really nice.
Yep. And what stands out for you? Is it the arrangements? Is it the grotto? Is it all the women on stage? All the connections that you see your friends and stuff?
I think it's so many things. I really do think part of it is the personal connection to it. I think part of it is the kind of live music, the kind of just like strength and presence that it gives, especially because since they are a theater company, a lot of it was very theatrical in its presentation. Like they had like dancing, they had more of like, I don't know. When it comes to theater, you have a lot of like storytelling narrative to fill out, a lot more than just like your typical concerts, for example. And they had a very like detailed narrative or like subtext for everything. And they had that in the program that they gave. They gave like a good outline of like the story that they wanted to tell. And it was very, very cool to see. And they had like different choreography. So I think the idea of it being very theatrical, very grounded in performance and presence, and the fact that it's people that I already love and love to hear sing. Yeah. And the songs are beautiful. I think it, oh, and it's outside. And there was this cool effect at the grotto, and not to go off course too much, but yeah. So the show would typically start at like early sunset. And by the end of the show, it would be dark outside. The sun will have set. Right. And by the end of the show, there was always the song. It's a set. It's a show. There was a song that was sung by by three
yeah,
of
it
the.
It wasn't random. Yeah, yeah.
No, by three of the women called "Light of a Clear Blue Morning." And it was the Wailing Jenny's version of the arrangement that they went for. And it's this a cappella, like, I can see the light of a clear blue morning. And it was like, basically like this round, and it, after the sunset, that's kind of when you realize like, oh, we've been like outside, the sun has set. And it is just such a beautiful, like clean, pure, innocent moment of just like, people coming together and singing. And it, I think the simplicity of that is something that can only be sought after, and only very few people can really execute perfectly.
Yes. Yeah. And now if we go past, let's say, this one show, what for you makes live experiences memorable?
Mm-hmm. To make a live experience memorable for me, I think it has to have some kind of acknowledgement and respect for an audience that's there. I'll elaborate.
Yeah.
It's not enough to just say like, "Hey, New York City," and then you like proceed to never, never make it.
Hey. New York City, that whole joke that's said every time. You don't know what joke you're sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, but it's like, I don't know. I'll see shows that are so like, they have such a set track and they don't have time or like space to have an audience with them. And sometimes that's just like a matter of needing a fourth wall to be really strong because there's a huge production going on. But I think what makes it memorable is when an artist or when the team or when the production allows the audience to, you know, be acknowledged, and not just acknowledged, but like respect the fact that they're there.
Right.
In the show I'm doing now, the whole second act is playing on the fact that it's a play. So there's lots of moments where I will speak directly to the audience, or I will like point to someone, or I'll like nod my head at people who are actually there, who I can see. And
right.
I know that's not like too much because it's a play and you're kind of set within the script, but being able to feel that connection with someone and to feel kind of them provoking you into an emotional reaction, I think that's what makes it memorable. And I think that's why A Song to the Moon was memorable for me, because I feel so compelled to feel that emotion.
In music, there's often like, there's definitely some people that do it like better than others, for sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Do you know, from your perspective, do you know why some are better at that than others?
I think some people are more in tune with who they are. I think of someone like Stefan Paquette, who every show is like an improv show, and he riffs with the audience, and he, you know, builds something that will only exist for that show. And even if some of the jokes are reused, the stacking of the jokes and like the way that, you know, he'll ask a question to the audience and he'll reference that for the entire time, and it'll build something that can only exist at that time. It's strong. When I go see a show that obviously feels like they're just trying to get through it, or, you know, they're just trying to okay, we have to do this today. Get the guitar on.
Yes.
Okay, we gotta, finish this. There's no like, there's no spontaneity. There's no like effort into making it a special, unique experience. And probably there's nothing in place to make it a special, unique experience either. There's probably nothing in the structure that was rehearsed to, you know, oh, how about, where's my 5-minute talk with the audience? Okay, I did it once. Now I have to do it at least 2 more times to like finish off something, right?
Yeah.
And it's not just like it's not just the pre-written like song intros. Like,
and that was how I found my car in New York City. And then it's like,
well, you bring you bring up a very interesting point, because sometimes it's, those moments have to be rehearsed.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's better if they're not. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to prepare like talking points. You almost have to prepare a script to create something that is fully thought out. And sometimes people just create a set list and it's rough.
Right. What we're saying here is that there's a balance, and it's very interesting.
Yes.
In a way where it's like, it's gotta be flexible in a way. You should be able to mold the show every night for it to be unique, especially when you get to like bigger acts. Like right now I'm seeing that with the Beaches, where it's like there's individuals that are coming to like many concerts in one summer, right? Mm-hmm. So it's and we got to make those sort of shows, specific shows, memorable for the audience member that was literally at the Calgary Stampede this summer, and also again in St. John, New Brunswick.
And how far apart were those shows?
Like a month and a half.
Okay, so, but yeah, it's like
yeah.
How do you leave enough room for it to be dynamic like that? So that's a whole like That's a whole like, I want to say like storyboarding, script writing, talking points. How do you build a set? How do you build a set list? How do you incorporate elements that, you know, people will say, oh, I love the theatricality in that concert. It's like, okay, well, what does that mean?
Yes. Yeah. And this all comes back to like, you know, musical direction and creative directing a show and stuff like that, which is a great plug. Thank you for eights. But, but what you were saying before, this balance, it comes back to really the, and I'd love to get your perspective on this, but the confidence of an artist.
Oh yeah.
In themselves, but also the production. Of the entire spaceship that's going around.
Yeah, it's good that you mentioned that, a spaceship. In my show right now, it truly does feel like a spaceship. We have a set that moves. We have projections. We have sound. We have so many lighting cues. We have entrances and exits that come in all the time. This is a contemporary play and not a musical concert. Let's be real.
Of course. Yeah.
But it's still, everything is set in motion. And I want to say, as a lead actor who's like subject and kind of victim to all of these like quick changes and all these things, I have to be aware of everything happening. And as soon as I don't know what's happening, I lose confidence. So it's not only just the team that has to know when to put the right cue, but it has to be the artist knowing when to say the right things, or knowing to expect something, or playing with the people in tech to make sure that something happens. You can't just expect, like, I don't know, to not deliver a line and then like, oh, there was a cue that was meant to be there. Oh no, what's happening? Oh no, someone come in. How do you lead that spaceship? How do you drive it so that even if there is like a little speed bump, how do you keep it going? And I think that's an essential skill to anybody who needs to be able to perform.
Fantastic. I wanted to get started on the quote segment of the podcast. Last year, for those maybe of listening for a long time, it was the Erykah Badu quote, comparing music and music business and art and the commercial aspects of art, and the balance between that and between those. This year, it is a Joni Mitchell quote from 2004, She says, yes, exactly. Joni Mitchell and 2004, which are both very representative of my brother.
Yes.
So fantastic. In 2004, she says, I heard someone from the music business saying that they are no longer looking for talent. They want people with a certain look and a willingness to cooperate. Samal, I want to get your take on this. And, you know, I want to go even just past the music industry. I wanted to talk about just performing arts in general, especially in theater and especially in acting, just in general. I'll repeat, I heard someone from the, let's say, creative industries art industries saying that they are no longer looking for talent. They want people with a certain look and a willingness to cooperate. What are your first instincts there?
Oh, I'm sorry to the person who said that Joni Mitchell had to hear and then relay, because
yes,
it's really interesting, and there's so many ways to dissect that quote, and there's so many truths to it. Now, when I hear this, right, I spent a lot of time yesterday kind of thinking this out, because you sent me this, and I was like, okay, there's lots of ways to go about this. So my first thing is, talent is essential. I think everything that is good is talented. And if there's a certain look attached to it, you know, that's great. That makes a star. That makes someone who is memorable. That makes someone who has influence, who has the image of a star, a proper pop star. I think of someone like, I don't know, Sabrina Carpenter, who not only is she talented, she's a great actress. She's a fantastic singer, fantastic performer. She's also beautiful. She has these amazing looks. She has amazing style, amazing visuals.
Yeah.
And there's the willingness to cooperate, which I guess is like a kind of a weird part that I want to get to later.
I was going to ask you about that. But
yeah.
Continue,
but I think of her and I think, she's the total package. She is like everything that is like amazing appeal, amazing talent. I would love to go see a show of hers, and I would love to know what's happening. I think of someone, if I just think talent, I don't know, someone like Ed Sheeran, for example, who I might not ascribe to the certain look category, but, he's definitely, a nice looking person, but I think what attracts people to him is his talent and his relatability and his songwriting and his live shows that are always like, I don't know, him on a guitar with a loop pedal and, I don't know, productions, not really a set. He's just kind of alone on the dark stage, which is something. And he has a t-shirt and jeans. But if I try to think of people or artists who are just in like the certain look category, I can't tell anyone. Like I can't, they're not memorable to me. So for me,
right,
if you just have a certain look and a willingness to cooperate, for music, for example, I can't remember anyone who just
had the looks and just were just willing to cooperate.
Like they have to be good. They have to relay that kind of emotional connection that I was talking about, right? They have to be able to write something or, you know, perform something. And honestly, it's not just writing or performing. The talent comes in many different areas. I think that quote is kind of like, I think it's maybe more geared to performers, but I think for the industry as a whole, for both theater and music, it's kind of ignorant of how large the industry is and how many roles you have to fill. Talent isn't just performing on stage. It's also, is this person an amazing lighting designer? Is this person an amazing drummer? Though you do have the look.
Cheers.
Yes, you're welcome. is this person a great costume designer? Is this person an amazing photographer? Meg Moon.
There you go.
You know,
shut up, Meg.
Is this, you know, there's so many roles to fill that require so many different talents. And I want to say not everybody needs a certain look. I feel like the certain look is kind of like, if you have the certain look, that's cool. And you get to be more of like in the public eye, and maybe that's cool for you. Maybe you want that. And maybe some people don't want that. Maybe they do have the certain look. Maybe they don't. I think willingness to cooperate is kind of like a cynical point of view. I think it's like, oh, like I'm a talent scout. Oh, you're really cool looking. Do you want to come sign onto my label? And you'll have to do all these things, but I'll make you a star. Like it's what's, but I think in my mind, that willingness to cooperate is like a kind of cynical point of view. But then if you transform that into like willingness to collaborate, I think that's where I kind of go into theater a bit more, where I want to say the look is more important, but not in the way you think. Because for theater, you want to represent like, I don't know, sometimes a regular person. So what does that look like? Is that someone who looks maybe a bit more average, or is that someone who looks a bit more like normal, I want to say?
Right.
When it comes to theater, you can't, or any performing live arts, you can't hide or fake talent, right? You can see if someone doesn't feel confident, or if they don't feel like they're like doing the right things on stage.
Yeah.
But a certain look is very achievable, I want to say. I think that's the easiest part. Having good style, having, you know, a team of people who work on you to achieve that look, I think that is maybe the most possible thing. Talent is either, I want to say, like, is it your hobby? Or is it like your soul depends on it? Right?
Right.
It's like, do you...
Yeah.
Is it the most important thing to you? Or is it, oh yeah, I love to sing. I'd love to, you know, sign onto a label, and I'd love to, you know, write an album. And then you're trapped in that for like 10 years because it's terrible.
Yeah. I mean, you bring up some really fantastic points that I don't know if we've had on the pod. And I just want to specifically look at one thing, one word that you said, confident. You're saying,
oh, yeah,
you can sort of look at somebody, or, you know, even from the audience perspective, you can see who's maybe not confident on stage, you know, especially in theater.
Yeah. And I think,
can you speak to confidence?
Of course. Yeah. I think there's a very clear difference for me between confidence and talent or ability to, you know, have technique or build like a cool performance. Confidence is the ability and having access to full control of what you're doing, right? Regardless of if you have full perfect technique or you've honed your craft or whatever. I think so many shows that I've seen, or like, I don't know, I've directed a few like kids theater camps, for example, right? And when they know their script, and when they know what they have to do, and when they know that, like, okay, I'm going to stand here and the light's going to come and I'm going to say what I have to say and I'm going to talk with this person, that's confidence. Right. They might be, you know, not shit actors, but they might not know anything about theater, but to see them be confident in like just knowing what they have to do and committing to it, even if it's like, oh, I don't know, like you see like, a musician on stage and their job is to hit one key one time and they're proud and they're in it and they're dancing along to everyone and they're so happy to be there. I think that's confidence. I think that is more interesting to me than someone who is committed to doing everything perfectly. And for theater, being the right person at the right time with the right energy is more important than being the best actor or the best performer. So that's my piece.
That's fantastic. Do you have any, maybe some advice, or maybe some insight on how individuals could maybe develop their confidence?
Have a team of people around you who are there to support you and guide you. I think someone who maybe be like a staging coach or a music director, someone who can tell you not only that you're doing a good job, but also work on these things. Someone who is very honest with you. Like the best yeah. advice I've ever gotten is that what I did was horrible. But then not only to say that, but also tell me why it was and how to improve it. So it's this kind of constructive criticism yeah. that is a net positive for anyone performing. And I think that's what makes confidence soar. And, you know, you don't know if you're doing it right or wrong. And that is a place of unease. And that is a place of lack of confidence. If you know where you're weak and where you're stronger in a performance, you can say, okay, I can rely more on like grounding myself and like being sure that I'm doing the right things in the places where I'm a bit weaker. And then when I'm feeling really strong, then I can soar and accept it. But I think confidence is embracing everything about what you're doing and knowing everything that's going on and being able to embrace it.
Yeah. Fantastic. I wanted to get into the maybe a little bit more personal questions of the podcast. Can you start by sharing how your artistic journey began and what inspired you to pursue the arts?
Well, I don't think I really had a choice.
Amen.
our family, obviously, it kind of just, an artist begets more artists, right? You kind of, once you see the world a certain way, or once you're able to channel the world a certain way into music or theater or even visual arts, like you kind of don't really have a choice unless you just like force yourself to stop, you know? It's like, you kind of just have to. I think for me, I'm also just a very dramatic person to begin with. I think that was kind of just honed through theater.
Right.
But what inspired me to pursue it, I think, was just being in a space where it was,
nurtured?
Yeah, nurtured. Or it was cultivated, like, with me, where it was like,
sure.
I was given the space to explore myself and how to have fun and how to, like, interact with the world. And it kind of just became, like, the conduit. Like nothing else really worked. Like I tried a bunch of different sports. I know you were a major athlete throughout your youth and through high school. And I tried so many different things. And the only thing that I really attached to was like the solo sports, like swimming or running or I don't know, things like that, where I felt like I could just work on myself and not work with anyone else. Yeah.
The hockey, I gotta say, was a sight to see early on, Simon.
Well, Simon
on the ice was fantastic.
I was fantastically in my own lane at my own speed. I can't skate.
Yes,
but but it was I think the openness with our parents to go like, okay, what about this? And the ability for me to say, no, I don't like that. And for them to respect my decision from such a young age, it gave me that confidence to know that like, okay, my decisions for what I want to do and what I don't want to do matter. Mm. So pursuing the arts for me was a choice after seeing so many other different things that didn't interest me. So it was like, oh, this is where I feel happy. This is where I feel like I'm valued. This is where I feel like I can express myself and be free and like have fun and be creative. And that turns me on to the world. Right.
Yeah. And you bring up a very interesting point about having the choices, but also being validated by, you know, your parents, our parents, about respecting the no's and the yeses when it came to choosing a path.
Exactly. You know,
things like that. And growing up, sir. Oh, go ahead, please.
Oh, no, please. keep going. I think it's going to come here.
Well, I was just about to ask in those lines, you know, growing up with so many, you know, paths and creative influences, not only by our family, but, you know, the people that came into our house all the time as well. How did you decide which direction to focus on? And I don't, and I want to be clear with focus because there are so many paths.
Yeah. I think I've heard you say this word, and I've heard so many other people say this word so many times, but multi-hyphenate, I think it's a,
yes,
I think it's a weird word to say, but it's the only thing that kind of fits sometimes. Multidisciplinary, multi-hyphenate, all these kinds of things. I think it's, pardon my French, bullshit to only focus on one thing. I think we can hold space for so many different things in our life. I think of like my current influences. Right now I'm doing theater very much 24/7, which is so fun, and it's so freeing, and it feels extremely validating, especially after the beginning of the pandemic, where I had so many projects canceled and I saw like a major bridge towards theater that was kind of burnt before me through the cutting of the theater department at Laurentian in Sudbury.
Yeah.
So a lot of that was like, okay, and I think we'll move to that a bit later, but growing up by all these influences and deciding which direction to focus on, I think it kind of just comes in waves, really. Like, oh, I really love writing right now. Oh, okay, I guess I'm going to write something. Oh, wow, okay, I've stumbled onto an artist that I love to sing. Let's learn their entire catalog and sing it for, you know, a year. Oh, I love this play. Oh, I'm doing this play now. Oh my gosh, I'm learning this musical. Oh, I've been asked to do music direction. That's so cool. So I think direction to focus on is, the best thing is to say, okay, this has come up. I want to do it. Let's do it. I think it's not just like trying everything as they come up, but it's also like trusting your gut to say, oh, do I want to do this? Yes. No. Am I going to do this? I think it's just like trusting that you have agency and that you have like control over your life, and also acknowledging that you have time to try so many different things and to do all these different projects. Like, I'm 20 and I've done all these things so far. And I'm like, I know there's so many different things that I want to do. I know there's things that I haven't done yet that I want to do. I have a list. I know I'll get to it. And I don't have to worry about doing everything now. I can just rely on that. And I think that goes with your next question too.
Yes, it does. It's very much, you're very much on track here. I want to ask you about, and I wanted to ask this question to get your answer, but I also, you know, feel, I feel this question in a different way. Or in a very personal way, because, you know, I can be anxious or overwhelmed myself with a lot of different things. I want to ask you how you, find ways to channel all your different creative energies without feeling overwhelmed. And I also want to give space to, sometimes, you know, we are allowed to feel overwhelmed by what's going on as well.
Oh yeah. I think you and I, and so many people in our industries, are victims of burnout. And you know, I look at your career and I see you going from place to place, working with artists, having so many projects, so many contracts, so many different things, which is fantastic. And I am so proud of you. And it's so cool that you're able to like put your stamp on this world. But then I'm also like, Matt needs to chill the fuck out because it's too much sometimes. And I see you, and I see when you're a bit more like taking time for yourself, or when things are really rushed or happening. And I've seen you in moments that are, you're really overwhelmed, and I've caught glimpses of that. And I'm like, okay, I see that in myself, and we don't really talk about it. And that's unfortunate. But I think now is a great time to talk about it. Having so much going on is, it's fun. It's the going from place to place. It's keeping busy. It's not having to worry about anything else. But you should have to worry about it. But channeling all the different creative energies without feeling overwhelmed, it's, and as I say, the most important thing is what you're doing right now. Are you scheduled to be here in the right place at the right time, right here, right now? Are you working on this thing? Are you thinking about seven other things? Don't. Focus on this.
Right.
It's an ability and an acceptance to stay in the present moment. And I think that avoids being overwhelmed. You know, if I go to the theater, I get there 2 hours early. I do a warm up for an hour and then I spend, you know, 30 minutes doing like hair and makeup and I do all these things. And I spend 30 minutes just breathing and waiting and like focusing on mantras. And I don't think of anything else. My phone is off. Everything is put away. I come to the theater with an egg timer, my book of warm-ups that I have, and I just focus on that. And it's so nice to just be in a moment where nothing is like more important than what I'm doing. And I think about that, like when I don't have a project on the go, my mind immediately pivots to like another creative outlet. Right? I'm like, oh, I'm not doing much theater right now. Oh, well, music is fun again. When I'm doing theater so often, like for a long period of time, concentrated, yeah. I don't seek out new music. I don't, you know, I don't do a lot of visual art. I don't do a lot of other things because my mind is so wrapped in this present moment of doing this one thing that I want to do really well and I want to focus on. And when I'm not doing that, it's like, okay, well, oh, theater's fun. Oh, music is fun. I love singing all of a sudden.
Right.
It's like
again.
Yeah. It's really just being overwhelmed is it's having too much of the same thing going on at once. Right?
Yeah.
If I had four theater projects on the go and I'm constantly thinking about theater in so many different avenues, that's when I get overwhelmed and tired. But if I have a music project, a theater project, a visual art project, and they're in their own separate categories. And then on top of that, I have my own kind of private downtime at home that is hopefully unaffected by those. And I can go to a space where that's either focused on or I can like make the most out of it in those places. I think having that work-life balance.
Yes.
Buzzword. Buzzword indeed. Is realer than just the buzzword itself, right? And it's not just it's not just the balance, but it's also the separation.
Yes, yeah, very important. I want to ask you about any artists or works that have had a profound impact on your approach to creativity.
Everyone? I don't know.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Like I don't know. We work in such collaborative industries and fields, and you know, we grew up in the Franco-Ontarian kind of workforce, creative workforce, where everyone kind of works together and everyone is, it's a small community. Everyone is so connected. If you're not collaborating with someone, and what are you doing? Like, you're not going to get anywhere. But
yes, it's especially like burning bridges as well. Collaborating and burning bridges.
Oh my God. So kind of everyone who found impact on my approach to creativity is everyone, because I'm a thief and I take everything from everyone. And that's kind of how you're expected to grow as an artist, I feel. Or it's one way to do it. But you should be working with everyone and you should see how everyone's working. So you can say, oh, I like that. I'm going to work on that. I'm going to use that the next time I have to do this. Oh, what the hell is that person doing? That doesn't go with what I've learned. That feels like wrong, but I'll give it a chance. And then you see if it works. And if it doesn't, well, I don't know. It's 15 minutes of your time when you have a whole lifetime to go and you can just move on to other things. I think the people who have had the most impact are the people who have kind of sat with me and taught me these fundamental things. I think of someone like from a young age, Myriam Cusson, shout out.
Yeah.
love of my life, who is the program director, who is now the program director at my theater conservatory, which is fantastic. She invited me to go. And
just a shout out, because it's the roots are deep here, was my mother on TV.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think of someone like her, who kind of just, you know, planted this seed of like, oh, you're an actor. And she was so like nurturing with that. And
right.
She was so sure and confident with it. And she taught me so many things. And of course, so many other theater mentors in my life that I can only think about in such grand gratitude and like appreciation and respect. And it's like, I can't nail down one thing from one person, right? Because it's such a web. And it's cool to have that kind of like the village.
Yes.
The village.
Such an important word. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause it do take a village.
it do be taking a village.
It do be taking a village. Yes. So yeah, it's everyone. Everyone has had an impact. Everyone has had a profound impact. Even the people who are, I saw once and I said, I like that person. And it's just like their energy. I don't know. Like for acting, for acting, everyone is everything, right? My reference is people who are real in the world. So it's like, oh, I saw that person one time. Cool. Let's go. Let's play that.
Yeah, that is fantastic. That is really fantastic.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm sure, I don't know. I'm predicting that you have a list of people that you want to shout out here. But I just wanted to give you space to do that if you needed to.
Oh my gosh.
But also, I wanted to ask you, because you mentioned it early on, what does authenticity mean to you as an artist, and how do you ensure that your work stays authentic to your vision, to your own personal vision, right? Because for myself as well, everybody that I see, I can pull inspiration from.
Yeah.
But how do you stay true to your unique voice while still ensuring... Sorry, how do you seek inspiration? How do you like sponge information and influences while still being true to your unique voice and authenticity?
I'm gonna say it again, but it's really a matter of presence, and it's being able to take in all this information. And sometimes this is a process that takes like very long time to develop, you know, opinions and like values that are like new to you and that are not just brought on by your parents, for example, but to really like hone in on what these values mean to you and what these references mean to you and how to use them properly and how to build on them. I think that authenticity comes from, I have a teacher that says this, they consider like all of your references and yourself to be like a huge like nebula of stars. And everything you learn kind of gets added to that nebula and you're able to pull inspiration from those. But it's that kind of unique set of information that you have. And not just that, but also like the depth of your opinions and how, you know, deep you've reached and researched these things. I think being able to like, I don't know, this is a weird analogy, but like have a sucker punch of just like being yourself and just like relying on what you know and what you feel is correct and having those values developed, I think that's what authenticity is. And just being in the moment and trusting that you know what's good for you, and not only for you, but for your craft, for, I don't know, even just interacting with people socially on the regular, I feel. If I'm not being myself, what am I trying to do? What are we accomplishing here? There's nothing happening. It's kind of just research and being able to dig into yourself, and for others, it'll be unexpected, but for you, it's just to exist in your own kind of bubble, in your own kind of sphere where everything makes sense for you. And it's also being open to new things and processing that and researching that and like consistently growing and growing and growing. And it's a fun world we live in where that's possible.
And on that as well, do you find that one medium influences another in your creative process? For example,
I mean,
like does your work in theater influence your drawing and vice versa? Or like, you know, things like that. You know, you're talking about this, this nebula of stars. Does it sometimes influence or is it, you know, there's a part of this nebula that's theater and then there's a part of this nebula that's music, for instance.
Mm. I think the biggest part of the nebula is storytelling. And I think that's the main art, I would say. I think the artist telling stories, the mediums is theater, music, visual art. I think that's the bridge. I think everything in my life is about telling stories. And, you know, there's everything in that. It has the theatricality to it. It has the musicality to it. It has the visual parts to it. It has the movement, the dance part to it, right? It has like all these different aspects. People often tell me when I'm doing music, oh, you're very theatrical. Oh, you're very like image based. And when I'm doing theater, they're always like, you're so musical and you're so like dancey and it's so cool. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's
you're so dancey.
so it's channeling all those things, right? The question, it's the influence of everything. Like I can't go into a space and be expected to be only one thing. I think that's pointless. I think that's stupid because I am everything, and I am everything. Look at me, I'm everything. I represent everything that I am. And I think not choosing to not let something influence the other is a total loss. And I think it's an extreme disservice to the self that you've cultivated and grown over such a long time. And even if it's not a long time, it's your entire existence, which is everything. You are everything.
I think it's fantastic. I want to ask you in that same vein, how your perspective on the creative process of different mediums have evolved, you know, because I know your most of your life. In regards to, you know, going into theater as a very young child, you know, being a very musical and artistic household, you know, high school, all that stuff, you know, all of your various experiences, but also references and influences. Go ahead.
Yeah. Edit that out.
Specifically, I wanted to ask you how your creativity and, you know, maybe your creative self, has evolved over time, especially as you've gained more experiences and influences and, you know, especially in the past few years being in theater, like 24/7 and now in post-secondary education.
Yeah. I don't often say this, but I did do a year of music, professional music at TMU. alum.
Sort of.
It was really interesting to like hone a kind of different creative process during that 7 months that I was there. I kind of logged out for the next month and a half, I want to say. But as a whole, I think the creative process is it's a sham. I think it depends on what you're working on. I think it depends on who you are at the moment. I think it depends on what your influences are at the time. I think it depends on one thing, because it's never a set thing. I've had people try to sell me that, oh, the creative process is it's like this 5-step thing that you have to follow. And I'm like, no, it's not. Because sometimes you start with the final product and you're like, oh, wait, hold on. Does this make sense? And you have to kind of like work it back to work it for it again. So it's this kind of iterative, kind of multi-layered process of like, oh, what does this look like? How can I fix it? How do I go back? It's this kind of like ever constructing path. Like I have songs that I wrote 6 years ago that I'm still kind of like trying to figure out and working on. I'm like, okay, well, I love this. This is kind of solidified. Oh, I hate that lyric. Why did I ever write that? And I'm like, okay, I can keep it maybe, or I'll rewrite it. For a theater performance, it's like, okay, who are my kind of character inspirations for this role? Do I care about that right now? Do I just want to find out what's true to me? And then I can, like, if I feel stuck, do I find a supplementary information to like come round this out? I think as it's evolved, my creative process has just been what feels better now, and acknowledging when I'm stuck, or acknowledging when I need to go back, or acknowledging when I need to like fix things. Because right now, for my current performance in the curious incident of the dog in the nighttime, I was like kind of just feeling stuck with myself for a while. And I was like, okay, this is getting really lame, boring for myself. And I've been watching a lot of Doctor Who, and specifically Matt Smith, sure, who is an amazing actor in that role. I was like, that is exactly the energy that I need for this. And I've been channeling parts of his acting in that show. And it's just been satisfying to, and it's always satisfying to find something that's real that you can ground yourself on, that you can just embrace. And that's part of the creative process, is just continuously building and expanding upon what already exists.
There you go. Fantastic. You mentioned theater, you mentioned acting. How do you approach preparing for a role, and how does that process differ from different mediums of yours?
For a role in particular for theater, you're often working with, you know, a script, a set play that exists, right? So there's a lot of research and dissection that has to go with that, right? You have to analyze the script. You have to do all the beats. You have to, for this, there's a book that goes with it. So I've read the book many times. I've like cross-referenced it to make sure like, okay, what's coming from the book? What's added? What are like the time jumps that aren't in the script? What am I like? I hate this word.
Sure.
But like, what are the character beats? What's happening? What is real? So there's that. There's also like another whole part, which is like discovering the character physically, emotionally, in the voice, in the body. How does it feel? Like, what are the emotions that are happening? Where are the settings? What's happening? Where are we? There's all those questions. And then there's obviously memorizing a script, which takes, I mean, let's be honest, I'm still memorizing some parts now when we open tomorrow by the time that this podcast comes out.
yes.
but I'm pretty solid on everything now. But there's a few little words here and there that are important to
always.
Me. Of course. But also it changes. If I say something wrong in the moment, it kind of just feels right, and it doesn't remove from anything. But don't tell my stage manager that. But comparatively to, I want to say like, so that's the same when you're doing kind of any repertoire work, right? So when you're like doing a cover of a song, that's kind of the same thing, right? So like, that's kind of similar in that sense. You're analyzing what's going on, and you're like memorizing, and you're rehearsing, and you're doing all these things, and you're figuring out all these different things, your track, your set list, how do you navigate from one thing to the other? What are the, I don't know, what instruments are you using at this time? What's the next like preset for your synth? I don't know, something like that. But it's different when it's, you know, repertoire versus like writing something, like doing a piece of visual art or writing a song. That stems very much from, well, nothing. You start from nothing. You start from maybe an idea you have. You start from maybe something you read in a book, or an image you saw, or an interaction that you saw on the street. And you want to say like, oh, how do I like capture that?
Right.
And it's different because, well, it's different in the sense that it's your own work that you have to create from the ground up. And for theater, it's like, okay, I have to create my performance, but it's already based on something that's very real and in place, and there's a director and there's a team around me that's like making sure that everything happens. But when you're doing like a solo project, it's like, well, here we are, let's write something.
Yes.
And it might not work.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, there's always that. but yeah, for me, I think it's in theater and acting and all that stuff. It's quite different because you're oftentimes asked to restart from zero and bring that tool bag that you have built. But
yes.
It is your job to sort of discover who that character is within yourself. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that tool bag.
It's quite different. Yeah, please.
Yeah.
What is that tool bag? What does that mean for you?
It's everything. It's like, it's knowing what to do, when to do it, when no one else is telling you what to do. Right?
Yeah.
It's like, how do I rely on like my years of experience working on different productions and shows? And how do I know that like, okay, we're arriving at a point where I have to, you know, show up on stage and okay, there's so many things I have to be aware of. Okay. I have to be open to the audience. I have to be directing. I have to have good diction. I have to have like all these different things going on. I have to be aware of what's happening. I have to be in the moment. I have to know all these things. When you're in rehearsal, it's like, okay, how do we get this from point A to point B? Okay, I have ideas how to do that because I've done so much. The toolkit is like knowing how the medium works. It's knowing how things are supposed to go normally, right? And when that doesn't happen, you feel like kind of uneasy because you're like, oh, I've never seen this happen before. Do I have anything that I can like bring to like either resolve this or make this better for everyone? Sometimes that's not your place, but sometimes it's nice to raise your hand and be like, okay, I'm feeling really worried. Is there something we can do about this? And if they don't know, it can be like, okay, we did this thing once and like, you can kind of like try to show what a kind of possible solution. And I think that comes from collaboration and problem solving, which is the sport of creating art with people, right?
Well, and it comes from references and experience, right? And being able to reference those past experiences and say, okay, what worked, what happened? And it's very important.
Yeah.
And that tool bag, maybe a lot of people have similar tool bags, but what's important is that is the uniqueness of your tool bag and the quirks that your tool bag has and the stickers that you put on your tool bag or the patches or the zipper doesn't work on this tool bag, but
the charisma, uniqueness, nerve and talent of your tool bag.
Whoa, there you go. Can you repeat that?
The charisma, uniqueness, nerve and talent of your tool bag. That's a RuPaul reference.
Okay. Yes. Okay. I was like, okay, wait, what does that spell out? Yeah. Yeah. Of course. Fantastic. I want to ask you, what's the biggest lesson you've learned from performing live in front of an audience?
Oh, they're there for you. And you are entitled to take your time and not rush and give them something that is focused, that is in the moment. And you have space and you have time to breathe and just like take a moment for yourself so that you can present the best, right? If you're kind of just trying to rush through everything and you're like, oh, what's happening? What's next? What's next? What's next? Oh God. Oh God. And there's an audience. Oh my God. Oh my God. I'm panicking. You are allowed and you should have moments in the show where you're allowed to just rest and take a deep breath and have the moment go a bit longer than you have to, but it's necessary. And then you can come back stronger and more connected. Which like also goes with, like nothing is real, but everything matters, right? Like your kind of health and self-assuredness in this moment matters and the audience matters and what they feel matters and their participation matters. Everyone on stage, everything that's happening on stage matters. And that just goes to real life too. If you're not kind of taking moments for yourself to like breathe and bring your best self, or maybe not even in your best self, but your most like together self at that point, whatever it may be, you're kind of losing opportunities to just feel good about everything that you're able to bring. And on stage, those stakes are always higher. Like everything is always higher, and you have to be able to accept and acknowledge that and be like, I don't know. For me, it's like having mantras or like taking those moments really quick to like, okay, next line, right? It's right. Being able to like, not even break character, but just acknowledge the fact that like you're a human being and that you have limits and that you have like a capacity, and whether that's high capacity at that moment or if it's low or if you're not feeling entirely connected, you have the time and you have the time to, you know, build into that connection. Just because you start off the show feeling like shit and you feel like you're not able to connect to yourself doesn't mean that, you know, through the first 5 to 10 minutes, you're not able to like regain that momentum again and then find fun in it again. I had that happen yesterday right. at a rehearsal. The first 5 minutes of the show, I felt literally nothing. I was able to rely on technique and like what I know about the show to like get me through memory. It and then yeah. memory. And I'm still giving a really good performance, but it's not a connected performance and the audience won't see that, but I will feel that. And once I start feeling it, the audience will feel it even bigger. So right. I gave myself the time to just breathe and like tap into that, like that fire that you get when there's a performance and you're able to just like do things off the cuff and trust off the cuff and trust your impulse and your intuition and just go for it to the max. Right. And yeah. it's something that's really special to me as a live performer, that not every night will be the same or not every night will have like yeah. yes. the same problems. And I don't,
that's what's fun about it too.
Yeah. Times. And I already don't remember what I did last night. I remember kind of right. the feeling, but if I try to replicate that feeling, it won't be authentic. It won't be authentic yeah. to what I'm doing right now. So yeah, the biggest lesson is to just breathe and take time for yourself so you can be authentic regardless of these kind of stakes that are so high around you and like that pressure that might be there and that will be there. And it's your stage. You own it. You have time. People are there to see you and you are the person who takes their time and makes sure that they're comfortable and confident.
That's great. Can you share a memorable performance experience that significantly shaped your career thus far, Simo?
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm going to take it back to the very beginning because
there you go.
I think without that one moment that I actually shared with you, I don't think I would be doing what I'm doing now. And yeah. It's the first play I did. I think it was also maybe your first play too. I don't know. Was it?
Yeah. The Pirates?
The Pirates, yes. I had one line during that entire play. And it was to you. And it was, you came on stage with the goggles down and you couldn't see anything. And your character didn't know what was going on. And I reach up and I flick it open and you say, thank you. And I say, de rien. And just that one moment has just stuck with me because in many ways, it's such like a meta moment. It's like for theater, it's like, oh, you have a costume piece that's like not working properly, but it's scripted.
Right, right.
It's funny.
Right, right.
It's like in the moment, it's kind of like breaking this like theater wall that we have with an audience. It's like
right.
this collaboration between the two of us. And it's like, I don't know. I think back on that. And it's like, it's always been a moment that sticks out to me as like the first time where I felt like, oh my God, I'm doing theater right now. And it's like,
right, right.
And it's moments like that where I'm like, oh, okay. I just found it. And I was 5 years old and I found it. And yeah, Miriam always tells me this story about that show in particular, that there was a flamingo on the ship and partway through the show, I just ripped it off and started running around with it. And she said it was one of the most like powerful moments she's ever seen in theater, because it was just a kid having fun on stage, doing whatever the fuck he felt like doing. And it's,
right.
I think from there on, and like through collaborating with not only you, but like our small cast and just that entire show, has stuck in my mind, everything about that show. I can still see it very vividly. Right. And when I, for years and years, when I went to the TNO, Théâtre du Nouvel Ontario, I would see like, sometimes they would just leave out some of those costume pieces and I would get so like, yes, that is why I'm here. That is why I am. Wow. That is my purpose in life, is to be here now and doing this kind of thing. Be here now when all of the currents start to shift. but it's like, obviously there are so many moments that have shaped it, but like, as like the, just that moment in particular and the Flamingo moment and seeing that show, I was like, okay, people are telling stories. It's funny. It makes sense to me. We're being free. We're having fun. People are here for us. They love what we're doing. We're creating something that literally hasn't been done before. We finished it in 2 weeks.
Yep.
Everything just clicked, and nothing would have made sense for me unless we had that. So that's fantastic. That's the thing.
It's a great answer. And I'm very happy, very grateful to have shared those first few moments with you.
Yeah. So
there you go. I wanted to ask you what's next in your artistic journey. Any upcoming projects or goal that you're excited about?
Yes. Well, by the time this comes out, I've said it. I open a show tomorrow in Ottawa at the Ottawa Little Theatre. The show is The Curious Incident of the Dog in the Nighttime. I play the role of Christopher, who is a neurodivergent boy who is discovering, who's trying to figure out who killed his neighbor's dog, Wellington. And it takes him through this whole journey of figuring it out. And it kind of makes him find hidden dark truth about his family, and it makes him reconsider his entire life. So that's one thing. And also, by the time this comes out, yesterday, I will have started my second year of theater school, which is so exciting. And I'm so happy to be there all the time. And I just can't wait to work with my group again and work on projects and shows again. And we're doing projects together, and it's really fun. Aside from that, things I'm looking forward to, I'm always kind of writing by myself. Eventually I want to, you know, write, record, publish things, but it's not in my short-term goals right now. It's very much long-term. But everyone will know when that time comes. I'm sure of it.
Yes, it does. how do you see yourself evolving as an artist in the coming years? Any particular direction you'd like to explore more deeply?
Right. Well, a huge part of theater school right now is honing what I was saying, that technical craft and that like becoming a better actor and a more like controlled and like well-rounded performer. So that's kind of like my goal for the next 2 years until it's over. And then after that, obviously doing projects that work more like professionally and things like that. Yeah. Also just getting back into full swing. Before the pandemic, I was on the go, so many projects at the same time. And I don't want to go back into that and like be overwhelmed again or face burnout like that again. But I want to do more and more and bigger and bigger and better and better. And I want to do all those kinds of different things that really inspire me. And evolving as an artist, I want to keep becoming more true to myself. I want to keep bringing myself to the table. I want to keep, just discovering who I am, because, and everyone tells this to me, and I am so aware of it. And I see everyone, you know, discovering their passions that they never knew they would have had so much later on in their life. I think of famous painters who only discovered that they left painting at 81 and they're one of the most celebrated painters of all time, you know?
Yeah.
I always keep myself open to those developments. And I recognize that theater has been, since I was 5 years old with you, has always been that like guiding force in my life. And I've discovered other things along the way that are also important to me. And I just want to keep discovering things that are important, and whether or not it's in the same vein as theater or not, I'm always open. And I think that's the kind of lesson that I want to impart on people. And what's kind of my dream is that not only for myself.
That's the next.
Yeah,
that's the next question. What is the dream?
Yeah, the dream is not only for me, but also for everyone, is that everyone keeps growing and everyone keeps developing things that are important to them and finding things that are true and authentic and reflect back what feels correct. And whether or not that's, you know, finding a life at peace with what you have or continuing to grow and develop and search for things, or I don't know, travel the world or open a restaurant or write a book or be a pro athlete or be a coach, a trainer, a professional movie critic. I don't know. Do what makes you happy and what keeps you fueled and enriched in that moment. That's the dream. That's my dream for humanity, that people don't feel stuck like they have to do this one thing forever and ever, because that's boring and it's unrealistic and you'll just feel trapped in something that doesn't feel true to you. So that's the dream.
Beautiful, beautiful stuff. I want to ask you something, so a few different, a couple fun things here that is very specific to theater. I wanted to ask you if you had a dream role, a dream, maybe a theater, maybe a theater company to work with, or even a venue to work at.
Ooh, oh my gosh. Honestly, I've always considered myself to be a local performer. And I see myself, I see it possible working on bigger stages and with bigger companies if the chance arises. But I have always been perfectly content working with the people that I love, that are important to my community, that are important to where I grew up. I say this to everyone who asks me like, oh, what's your plan? It's like, my plan is to invest back into my community and, you know, work with those companies that have brought me up and that have given me the chance to succeed personally and professionally. I want to, you know, work with those, and I'm sure that I'll find connections and, you know, be brought to things that are bigger than those things. And maybe I'll do that for a while, but my goal is always that I just want to live my life being with the people who I love always and who I've always loved and who have always been there for me. And I think that's like just the kind of karmic balance that I want to keep happening in the world. But dream roles, that's a different question. that's always kind of a hard question. I think I have a list in my notes somewhere. Hold on. let me just look that up real quick, because I never remember them in a moment. Let's see. You know what? No, this is one that I've always that I've always wanted. Sorry, all of these are oof. Little Shop of Horrors, the role of Seymour, that's always been one that I've always gravitated to, and for so many different reasons. I just love the character, and it's always fun. The music is so great. I've also been thinking a lot recently about like playing gender bent roles, and I like doing adaptations of shows that have that in them. Not to take roles away from women, but that's not what I want to say.
No.
Sorry. But I find a lot of power in those roles, that feel a lot more closer to me than a lot of, typically male roles. And I think they can be written in ways that are you know, theatrically interesting and tell maybe a different story, maybe from a queer perspective, right? I want to yep. create theater that is inherently queer as fuck. And I want to bring that to the stage in any way possible. So my dream role is kind of things that explore that and allow me to explore different avenues of myself that are still always very authentic. Yeah.
Fantastic. I want to conclude this 81st episode yes. of the Clown Machine Podcast with the Dream Fest game. Now, for those who have been listening for a while, we play a few games on the podcast, one being the Dream Fest game, which basically allows our guest or allows me to question my guest on their dream festival. From yes. the from the executive chairs, from the festival programmer's chair. For this week, I have put Simon in the creative director's chair, basically asking them who the headline, middle act, and opener of is of this festival, where it is, the venue, when as in time of year, era as in what decade. Does this festival have a theme?
Oh,
how
yes,
would
it
you
does.
Put how he would put his signature on the festival as a creative director, and if there is one food or beverage that would be served that would best represent Simon, what would it be? So, all Simon, right. I would please go at your own pace wherever yes. you want to start.
Okay, so to start, this is a very queer festival. Let's just say it's
okay.
It can't be anything else in my mind if I'm being a creative director. It's very queer. It has very theatrical interventions, let's just say. I think it would be a very multi-stage kind of thing where lots of different things are going on. I think if we stick to like kind of the concert type of area with theater throughout, I think that would be the kind of thing for me.
Right.
I think like the main headliner, Cher, comeback tour, 2030s, you know, like it has to be kind of like,
that does like,
you know, she just released a new hit, obviously number one, you know, she's touring with that, in her, I don't know how old Cher is, and that doesn't really matter because Cher is timeless, of course. so anyways, 2030s Cher, she just released a new hit. She has a new look. It's her new comeback tour. She's developed a new technology for everyone to see. She's looking beautiful. Opening for her, let's see, Modern Influence. Why not? Let's get the party started. Charlie XCX, she's just released something new. She's getting the party going for everyone who wants to have that moment. Yes, the Brat Cup indeed.
Brat 6.
Oh, it's 2034, the 10-year anniversary of Brat, of course. Cher is the headliner. Oh my gosh. Where is it happening? It's happening honestly, why not? Some national park somewhere, if they still exist by then. It's in the woods. There's an audience of wildlife. They all come together. They congregate, like Snow White, and
oh yes, sure, gets like picked up.
Yes. Okay. So to elaborate on the theme, it's queer. It's in the woods. It's very it's a comeback. It's a it's a reunion tour for so many different artists, right? Maybe it's a bunch of different artists that have maybe retired by then. Who knows? Who knows that they have? Maybe Madonna will have retired by then. Maybe she's going to come. Maybe maybe Adele will have been focusing more on her family for a while. She's been doing such fantastic concerts recently, by the way. Those videos are insane. The t-shirt cannon. Maybe it's pink and we, you know, we install
It's a ring so that she can do ziplining maybe through the woods, well, you know?
Well, the zipline, it's already installed. It's tree ziplines. Like, yeah.
And
just attach Cher.
Cher to the Cher. Maybe Lady Cher, Gaga.
Sorry, I meant Pink. Yeah. I meant Pink.
Yeah. But. But maybe Cher. Maybe Cher comes in on she gets not airlifted, but airdropped through with a helicopter. into the woods, and it kind of creates this like huge like draft through the trees. And I don't know. Nearby is Patti LuPone doing a solo set of her best, you know, theater hits throughout the years, and she's delivering monologues or whatever. And there's Bernadette Peters doing something, and she's, you know, it's all these people who have had this really long careers that have to be celebrated once again. And Charlie X's X is there as an opener to bring in the younger crowd, of course. I think the signature would be these kind of like of this festival, because that's one of the points is there would be like every now and then between sets, I would want people to come in and around the stage, and there's like these kind of like hidden kind of areas throughout like the woods where there's paths, of course, but it's like you can kind of go to like hidden kind of like theatrical performances or like either like short plays or like performance art kind of things hidden around here and there. I think it would just make for like a very like hyped up like performance kind of venue, kind of space. But also that would cater to like more extroverted people and things like that. And then it would have like these kind of quieter areas that it's like more expected to be like respectful to the space and like quiet, and like these kind of down areas that have more like theatrical elements that are more for the introverted people. And that's where I would be most of the time, I must say. but it would be just this like calm in the woods nature. I think that's what's missing from a lot of festivals too. It's like we often go to like these very open areas. I see photos of like, I don't know, Coachella or like whatever these big concerts are that are like in huge flat areas. And it's like, where are the mountains? Where are the trees? Where are the woods? Where are the, well, of course, like noise pollution. So maybe you don't want that. But but ideally, it would just be this, maybe it's all like acoustic sets. Who knows?
Who knows? But there's a lot of ideas there. But
there's so many ideas.
2034. We have until 2034, so it's fantastic.
Yes.
Just the last one, Simo.
Is
there one food or beverage that you'd serve that would best represent you?
Ooh.
What would it be?
Grapes on the vine. as a dramatic person and as a follower of Greek god Dionysus, who is the god of wine and theater and many other things, you can look him up. He has a lot of imagery of wine and grapes. And I think, it's happening in a vineyard, of course. And then in the woods. So just grapes on the vine. That and there's maybe fantastic. Like fruit and like fresh gardens everywhere. And you can just like go pick some things. And beverage, water. I don't know.
Brita water.
Yes. Brita. I'm not a drinker, so I think if it would represent me, it would be water. Maybe tea. Maybe there's like an area for that. I don't know. And maybe I'll plot it out, send it to you. You can add a visual.
Yeah. Yes. Well, Simo, this has been a fantastic episode of the Clown Machine podcast. Honestly, one of my, probably one of my favorite episodes so far and cherished moments. It's so great to be able to speak with you in this context. I want to have more of these conversations off of the air.
Yeah, me too.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Matt. It's been truly lovely. I love talking about this and I love talking with you.
Cool. Thank you very much. and you know, we'll chat after.
Yes. Yes.
This week I had the absolute pleasure of having my brother Simon on the podcast. Honestly, probably one of my favorite podcasts of the entire Cloud Machine era of my life. It was so great to connect with him because he is in Ottawa and I'm currently living in Toronto. And it was such a great, I had such a great time talking about his creative nebula, his process, his day-to-day in the theater, how he thinks about just the creativity sort of aspect of his life, the theater, music, visual arts, the whole balancing of that. And for me, it was very special to see that we were going through the same things while maybe not necessarily seeing each other all the time. It was such a, just a fantastic episode to dive into the performing arts with my brother, Simon. To keep up with him and his latest projects and shenanigans, please follow him on social media at Rhys, that's R-Y-S dot Simon on Instagram. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Don't forget to like, comment, subscribe, and share this episode with others who could benefit from these creative insights. Maybe you want to share it with somebody, a family member. You know, for me, it was so special to connect with an individual that has been a part of my entire life. And we've shared all these moments. And I hope you just sort of see that and can connect with that as well. Also, be sure to join our new community at the 8 Network Discord. Whether you're a musician, industry professional, or music enthusiast, it's the perfect place to connect with like-minded individuals, gain valuable insights, and access exclusive discussions and content. Visit the link in the description below to join today. Thanks, everybody. Stay safe and see you next week. Bye.